Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Friends of Kevin Radio Show. The Friends of Kevin Radio Show helps promote businesses, nonprofits, and artists. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email to kevin@friendsofkevin.com to learn more about the Friends of Kevin Networking Group and to see a list of upcoming events. Visit the website at friendsofkevin.com. Excited to take out my longtime friend Joan Pikdeski with us. She's a realtor. We're going to talk a little bit about the real estate market in this segment. Hey, Joan, welcome to the show.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Yes, it is. So before we get into the segment, you have an upcoming event. Let's talk about that so I don't forget, to be honest, Joan.
Yeah, well, that actually worked out perfect today because I just posted it today. How perfect is that? So we're going we're going to be doing a seminar about credit, which is apropos because we'll soon be going into the spring market. Hard to believe, we're talking January, but spring market's right around the corner. So the it's going to be entitled Your Credit, How Does It Work, and How Do You Improve and Protect It? Because a lot of people don't really understand how credit works. They don't know that if they have a low credit, there's ways to make it go up. And you need to protect your credit because you hear all the time about, you know, people stealing credit and all of that. So it's being hosted by myself, Joan Pikdeski with Lear Realty Partners, in conjunction with Vivian Oda from PRMG, which is a mortgage company. And we have a young lady from Birchwood Credit Services. Her name, hopefully I won't butcher it, is Samia DeMarco. And she will be doing most of the talking and telling us and all of those present exactly how your credit works. So it'll be at the Borica Public Library on February 27th, starting at 7 o'clock. So hope everyone will sign up online. We have, yep.
Yep, so there is a sign-up for it?
There is. So it's an Eventbrite sign-up. You can actually go to my Joan Pikdeski Realtor Facebook page, and there's a link to it, and you can sign right up.
Beautiful. So I want to talk a little bit about the real estate market now. And it's interesting because I never really gave it a lot of thought until you made me give it a lot of thought, that the real estate market's different for a lot of the segments. So I want to just go through some of the segments in the time we have today. I want to start with the first-time home buyer. What makes them unique and what are some of the things they should think about, Joan, when they're going to buy a house?
So a first-time home buyer is obviously somebody who's never owned real estate, although there is a little glitch in that because if you've owned real estate like 5 years ago, haven't owned it since, you're actually considered a first-time home buyer for some of the programs, believe it or not. but that being said, somebody that hasn't, when it's something new, as with anything in life, do you know the steps you need to take? Well, probably not. So do you know how much you want to pay for a house or how much you're going to afford to pay for a house or a condo, whatever it is you're going to purchase? Probably not. People make assumptions. They go online and they, you know, go on to those different screens that you can go on and they'll tell you all these numbers. Not necessarily accurate because it's based on you, your particular situation. So in order to get what we call a real pre-approval, you have to go speak to a mortgage lender. So that's something that people need to consider. Don't waste your time looking for something when you don't know how much you can really afford. You know, what is an offer? What does that mean? Is it a contract? Yes, it is. People don't understand that it is a contract once you make that offer. And then there's an inspection period. What's an inspection period? What does that mean? What are you inspecting? What is it in the home that an inspector goes in and looks at? And what is it that you want to hear from that person? You know, if you're looking at a house that's brand new versus a house that's 50 years old, you're going to get different information from the inspector. A house that's 50 years old may have things in it that I guess what we call grandfathered, so it may have something in the home that they may, for instance, may not be able to do now. Like I had a home several years ago. They had a laundry chute in the home. Now, back when that house was built, the laundry chute was okay. It is not okay anymore because it's against the fire laws, actually, because fire can go right up the laundry chute. Most people don't think about that.
Never thought of that.
So there's So there's a lot of different things that a first-time home buyer, and that's just a really short list, that first-time home buyers needs to understand. in order to go out and really look for a house and find something that's appropriate for them. If they're not somebody that can do work themselves or can afford to have someone else to work for them, they need to think about what kind of a home or what kind of a condo that they're looking at. You know, is it move-in ready or is it something that may need work all the time? If it's just painting, most people can do it. It's a little bit more complex than that. You have to think about it. It's cost as well as time as well as ability. So there's all of that that has to be considered.
I really do like your advice about being careful, because I did this. You know, Cheryl and I went out on that proverbial Sunday drive when we were looking to buy a home, saw a home that was beautiful, Joan. We loved it, 2.5 times what I could afford. And it's harsh reality, Joan, when you look at what you can afford after seeing something like that. So that, to me, is the best advice you can give the first-time home buyer, is spend the time, find out what you can afford, what you're comfortable paying, and then look for homes. Please don't do it the other way, because you'll end up sad like I was, to be honest. It's tough.
And you just did something really that I should have said, too. Comfortable paying, because just because the mortgage people are telling you can afford, let's say, $300,000, but you're not comfortable paying more than $250,000 because the payments, monthly payments at $250,000 are much more comfortable for you than $300,000, then you should be looking at the $250,000 because that's what you want to be able to pay the bills all the time.
Yeah, as I said, it makes a big difference. So let's move on to, now that we did the happy news of people buying a house for the first time, now how about someone unfortunately maybe getting divorced? You know, what advice do you have for them?
So you have, unfortunately, you know, people will get married and things happen and a divorce happens. And now what happens? They go to a lawyer. The spouses determine that, you know, though one of them would like to stay in the house, it's just too much house and too expensive. They can't afford to be able to maintain it. So they have to sell the house. So then there's a whole process that has to be gone through. Lawyers involved. And when you have a divorce situation, you know, when you have a real estate attorney, you've got the divorce attorney, and someone along the line that deals with estate planning, because there's, you know, there's a futuristic piece to this. You probably have kids that have to be taken care of, and retirement at some point down the road. All of that has to be considered. So going through a selling of a home in a divorce situation is always kind of touch and go, and hopefully It's not a bad divorce, as they call it, you know, where the two are not speaking to each other. Hopefully it's a friendly divorce where they're able to sit down and talk through this and decide what things will stay with, they will split, how much monies will go in either way and all of that. So it's a concern, and it's something that has to be gently gone through, both with the real estate agent and all the parties involved, because as I just said, a number of parties involved in this.
But like you said, Joan, it unfortunately is a very emotional time, and I've seen people going through this, unfortunately, and their concern is, I want the house. And I can respect it, you know, maybe your babies have grown up there, but you have to also step back as a financial person and say, okay, that's great, but can I afford to live in this house? And I've just seen people struggle, you know, like I'm staying, you know, the heck with Kevin, you know, I want the house, and you can't afford it. And it takes such a bad toll on people because, you know, every cent they have is going into the house. So, you know, they did it because they wanted, thought that would make their babies happy, but they have no money to do anything fun with the babies. So you got to look at it from a financial standpoint too, right?
Right, because now there's two people in two different locations instead of two people in the same locations. And I'm effectively taking care of two places to live, whether one is owned and one is rented or two or whatever that situation is. Just think about it. It costs more money to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the reality. And I actually have had a couple of people that were in that situation, and the wife tried to hold off as long as she could, and she couldn't. Got to the point she couldn't take care of the house, things were falling apart, and the former husband just said, you know, I'm done, we need to sell this house, we need to get out of this and just go our separate ways, and you know, and not have this over our heads, because it's not good for anybody.
No. So, how about, unfortunately, when people pass away? So you have someone, they lose a spouse. What are the
Right.
considerations, that the surviving spouse should consider?
Well, and here again, you can have a couple of different scenarios. It could be someone that passes away and has young children. Hopefully, they have set the stage prior to them passing with having life insurance. It may help to cover some of the mortgage over, for the next year or so, because obviously, when someone passes, it's very emotional. And when you're emotional, that's not the time to be making long-term decisions if you have to. So the more you can prepare in advance and have those things in place, the better. But that being said, a lot of times that isn't the case. A person passes away, whether it is a younger person or an older person, even, a senior. That's, as we get older, it becomes unfortunately more common. And now this person is not in the position to hold on to the house. They probably are not in the position to make repairs to the house. So now you have to make the decisions on, how do we sell this house? Is there can we do some things that maybe be able to be paid for a closing, and that way we can get a little bit more money for the home and be able to move into something a little bit less expensive, or maybe go into a rental if that's the need, what do we do? What is the best situation for the person involved? So it really is a case-by-case basis, whether there's kids involved, whether people need to move to a whole new town. That's possible too. So then they have to consider selling the home and then moving to a new school district, perhaps, and getting the children settled. So there's a lot of little pieces to the puzzle that have to be talked about and thought through carefully before any moves are made for anybody.
All right, so now let's do some happy houses then. Now, how about someone who maybe is considering buying a vacation home, or even maybe a rental, like as
I
an
think I want to
investor?
go on the
What
vac
type of advice?
I want to go on the vacation one.
Yeah.
I want to go to
Well,
Aruba. That's where I want to go.
it would be pretty appealing right about now. But what
I
are some of
know,
the
really.
considerations they have to think about? Because that's a big step.
It is a big step to get a second home. So now you're thinking about, do you want this strictly for you and your family? So so it's not going to be used all year round. Do you want to have certain times of the year that you and your family are going to be there, and maybe you'll rent it out, almost like they do timeshares for other times of the year? And then you're going to think about the potential tax consequences and legal ramifications of all of that. Where it is that you're going to purchase it. excuse me. This whole thing with Airbnb, a lot of the people are starting to get involved in the Airbnb, and there's some of the towns are now popping up with some new restrictions on Airbnb and what you can and can't do, and how much can be taxed or not taxed. And so you really kind of need to know all of that before you make those kinds of decisions. But still, you know what? I'd still go for the rental, for a vacation rental.
No,
That
it
to me
does.
is a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely is
But
the
then
best. So,
but sometimes people buy a second home specifically for rental purposes, even though it is in a dream location, maybe up in the mountains or something, they just want that rental income. And so then who's going to take care of the renters? Because you're probably not close to the area that you're buying this in. And so you have to hire someone, usually some sort of a property management company, to handle it for you and interview the people that are going to rent and all of that. So there's considerations to be had in there too.
Joan, we've got about 45 seconds left. What's your contact information? How can
45
people learn more,
seconds.
my friend?
Okay, so they're going to call me at Joan Pachevsky. No, that's not what they're going to do. They're going to call me at 978-376-3978 or my email, jpachevsky@gmail.com.
Joan, really appreciate you taking the time to jump on the call with us. As always, thanks for being my friend.
Thank you for being my friend. Have a great day and Happy New
Have a
Year.
good day. Yeah.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
All
Bye
right,
now.
bye.